last night in our Motzei Yom Kippur Shir. So we spoke a little bit about the building of a sukkah, because the Shulchan Aruch quotes that one is really supposed to try to build the sukkah already starting Motzei Yom Kippur. Most of us don't have the ability to practically do that for some technical reasons, so at least we get a little bit of the learning. So I imagine that the same way that there's a minhag Yisrael to try to build the sukkah starting Motzei Yom Kippur, there's probably a minhag to try to look for a dalam minim already, the day after Yom Kippur also. So in the days of the Rishonim, you probably didn't have this tzorach that we have today. Most people weren't running around the day after Yom Kippur looking for a dalam minim for a variety of reasons. First of all, most people didn't have their own dalam minim. The Rashbam and the Mavasra quotes that the minhag in the days of the Rishonim was, and most people, the Ashkenazi communities, most people couldn't get, there weren't the sirogim growing in Northern Europe, so they would get one or two sets for the entire community, and then they would just be makbet, they would sell to each other, so that way when each person picked it up, so they would be the ones who would actually own the set of dalmidim. So in most people's minds, they weren't really so concerned about looking for a little bit of esrog the day after the sukkahs. Even those few people who were able to get their own little bit of esrogim, they did. In the days of the Rishon, they didn't start looking around the day after Yom Kippur. They probably had ordered it already. It took them months to let it arrive. But in today's world, so we have a little bit of a different mindset. Baruch Hashem, we have that ability to fulfill the mitzvah in a much easier way. So for most of us, already starting to think in the Luv Esrog mindset. So I thought we've given some of these shirim in the past, but it's always Chayyim Beis Chodesh. It's always a timely topic. Just to try to refresh our minds a little bit, refresh our memories about some of the things that we should be careful of when we look for a Luv Esrog. What some of the basic highlight things are that we should try to look around for. We'll take it min by min, see how far we get. Usually if we start with the Aravos, then we have a chance of getting to all four. If we start with the Esrog, we may not ever get to the Aravos. But we'll start with the Esrog anyway. It's the first in the Pasuk. L'kach t'mechem yomishon priyei tzadar. So the Torah says that an Esrog has to be a priyei tzadar. So the first Mishnah, in the beginning of Maseches, I mean the third breath of Maseches Sukkah, tells us that many of the dinim of Dalet Minim revolve around this phrase hadar, that the Torah describes the esrog as being hadar, as being a beautiful type of a fruit. So the simple reading of the Gemara is that this din of hadar applies not just to an esrog; it actually applies to all of Dalet Minim. This is the halacha that governs most of Dalet Minim, that everything has to be a hadar. What's considered to be hadar, what's considered to be beautiful. So the Torah doesn't say explicitly what the details are, so you have to go case by case and try to figure out what the halacha is, what's considered to be a hadar, what's not considered to be a hadar. So in the realm of esrog, we find there are many halachas that revolve around the fact that the esrog has to be pretty, has to look nice. That's what the Gemara describes. Let's say you have certain blemishes, certain marks in an esrog that detract from the esrog's beauty, so that's considered to be a problem. How bad does it have to detract? Not every esrog that's not beautiful is necessarily a bosel. At what point do we say that it's reached, it's dipped beneath a point where it's so lack of hadar that it's bosel? So here the Gemara tells us that it depends on different factors. One of the factors is, depends on where exactly in the esrog it is. You can have the same size mark, the same color mark, same kind of a blemish, but if it's in a place that's not so conspicuous in the esrog, so then it's going to be alright. If it's in a place that's very, very conspicuous, then it's going to be a problem. Which is the part of the esrog that you see more? You see the top of the esrog. You look at something, you look to the top, it's the tukta in the bottom of the esrog. People aren't looking that much. So therefore, the Gemara differentiates between what's called the chazozis. A chazozis is like a pimple, like a blemish or something. Something that's growing in the esrog. If it's in the top of the esrog, so that could be a problem. If it's at the bottom of the esrog, which is one or two little marks, it's not going to be a problem. But if it starts to take up half of the esrog, it takes up a good chunk of the esrog, or even if it doesn't take up a significant amount of the esrog, but there are a lot of them floating around, so then it's going to be a problem even on the bottom. So that's why it's based on this gemara that we try to be very machmir with the top of the esrog. The top of the esrog is considered to be the most chomer part of the esrog, and any kind of a chazazis, any kind of a blemish or mark or something, is going to disqualify the esrog there. Most of our esrogim don't have that. Most men esrogim don't have these pimples and blemishes. You would never want to buy such an esrog anyway. But the Gemara discusses what's called shini mara. The Gemara says that let's say you have a strange color on an esrog, a color that's not supposed to be there. The Gemara says a strange color on an esrog is also considered to be like a chazozis, and it's going to be governed by the same rules if it's towards the top. If it's towards the top, it's going to be a problem. If it's top third, it's going to be a problem. If it's towards the bottom, if it's just one little mark, you can barely see it, so that's going to be okay. What's considered to be a shirim ha'ara? So those colors that don't belong in an esrog. What are some of the colors that don't belong in an esrog? So one of the colors that don't belong in an esrog is black. An esrog is not supposed to be black. It's supposed to be yellow. So if you have a black mark on an esrog, if it's at the top of the esrog, that's going to be a problem. So 95% of esrog have black marks in them. Teretz says those are not marks. Those are dirt. So if you know how to look at them carefully, you'll notice right away that those are not really chazosis. Those are not really shirimara. Shirimara means that it's mamaships at different colors, something is growing, it's something abundant, something strange in the esrog. You have a little bit of dirt that gets stuck inside the crevices of the esrog, that's garnished. So if you just take a look at it, 99% of the time you can tell that this just looks like dirt. But if it's something that's really, really changing the essence of the esrog, it's mamash growing onto the esrog, it's really a different color, that would be a problem. There is a question in the Rishonim about another color, whether that's considered to be a shirim ha'ara, which is the most common shaila that we have. That's a green esrog. A green mark is considered to be a shirim ha'ara, considered to be a different color of the esrog, which would potentially disqualify the esrog. So the Gemara raises this question, and the way most of the poskim assume that the conclusion of the Gemara is that it's not. Green is not qualified as a shirim ha'ara. Green is a different problem. The Gemara says that when you have a green esrog, so that indicates that the esrog isn't ripe yet. If the esrog isn't ripe, it's not really called a pre. So the Torah says it has to be a pre, it has to be a fruit. It says the edible has to be ready. If it hasn't yet ripened, then it's a problem. So there's a question in the Rishonim, what exactly is the problem of the green marks? Some of the Rishonim learn, minority view of the Rishonim learn, that it's a problem of a shini mahar, it's a different color of the esrog. And other Rishonim say it would be a problem of lack of ripening. It might not kamina between the two. That's what the poskim quote, that let's say it's not totally green. Let's say it's already starting to turn yellow. So half the esrog is already yellow, just got a few little greenish here and there. So if you hold that it's a problem of shirim ha'ara, that would be a problem. Then it's like chazazas, it's like black, and then it's a serious problem. If you hold that the whole problem of the greenest rogim is like, it's not a change in the color. This rogim is supposed to, it's supposed to be. It's not supposed to turn black, it's supposed to be green. So if you hold that it's just a question of it's not yet ripe, so then one could argue that that's only if it's totally green from head to toe. But if it's starting ready to ripen, so then it's already good enough. You would buy a fruit like that also. You would eat a fruit like that also. So that's already considered to be a pre. That's what the Minhag HaOlam is. Most people are very, very makel on this. That's what everybody does. Most people don't go running around looking to make sure that the esrog doesn't have any green in it whatsoever. According to one day in Rishonim, it would be a problem. According to the mitzvot, it says that if it have a little bit of green, so then that green is like a shirim ha'ara, can potentially pass on the whole esrog. So the Minhag HaOlam is not that way. The Mishkanos Yaakov was machmer like that. He's a tshuva like that. He dafka wanted a completely yellow esrog. Someone machmer like that. Someone in Midas Chasidus to look dafka for a completely yellow esrog. The only problem is if you look for a totally yellow esrog, it's going to be brown. You have to get it not too yellow. It's got to be just barely yellow, because then if it's already in the dark yellow, then by the time it's the zopa, you can have it's not going to look so nice. The Mishnah says that if you have an esrog that's chaser, esrog is missing part of the esrog, that's considered to be a problem also. Why exactly is that a problem? So that's a machlekes in Rishonim. So the Ran, at the beginning of the third paragraph of Sukkah, writes, that's also a din of hadar. All the dinim are dinim of hadar. There are some dinim of hadar in terms of chazazas, and there are dinim of hadar in terms of shenimaras, and there's another din of hadar that if it's missing, so it took a bite out of the esrog, so that doesn't look very nice. That's also considered to be a chisaron of, no pun intended, chisaron of hadar. So Tosfos, in the beginning of the third paragraph of Sukkah, disagrees with the Ran. Tosfos writes that he thinks that esrog and chaser is a different type of psul. An esrog ha'chaser is possible because the Torah says you have to have lukachta mechem, it has to be lekicha tama, it has to be a complete lekicha. So that's the source that you have to take all four minim. Let's say a guy only has three minim, so you don't say that, well, three out of four are bad. It has to be a complete lukachta mechem, lukachta means lekicha tama, it's got to be a complete lekicha. So the Ran, so Tosfos writes, lekicha tama not only teaches me that you have to have all four minim, but it means each min has to be bishlemusa. If the min is cut in half, and you're missing a part of the min, that's a chisaron lekicha tama. The Ran apparently disagreed, the Ran apparently understood that lekicha tama means that you have to have all four minim there, but within each min itself, so then it's governed by the regular din of hadar. So chaser is called a lack of hadar, then it's possible. It's very nafkaminim. So any difference between Tais and the Ran, at the end of the day, it's possible. It's possible in the Torah, either because it's lack of Hadar, like the Ran, or it's possible because it's lack of Lekicha Dama, like Tosfos. So Tosfos uses this idea to explain the phenomena that the Gemara says later on, the third parak of Sukkah, that if a person takes a bite out of the esrog later on during Chol HaMoed, they could still use the esrog. The Gemara tells a story about Rabbi Chanina, who would always take Chol HaMoed, he's like eating esrog. So he would take a little bit of bite, eat a little bit of the esrog for breakfast, and then he would use it for the mitzvah. The Gemara says that's okay. The Gemara says, as long as it's not the first day, the Gemara says that's okay. Esrog HaChoser is alright. So Tosfos points out that the simple reading of the Gemara at the beginning of the third parak of Sukkah is that if you have dalanim that are very, very dried up, galulav ayavesh, that would be possible even during the week of Chol HaMoed. So Tosfos throws out a question, why is that? He says, why is it that a lulav ayavesh is possible for the whole week, and an esrog achoser is kosher? So Tosfos tries to give you a whole explanation that the Rabbanan, some did it matru, some did it mar, the whole shtikl Torah. So in the middle of that shtikl Torah, the whole shtikl Torah is prefaced on the assumption that there are two different psulim taking place. One is a psul of Hadar, and one is a psul of Chaser. So Tosfos is able to somehow maneuver that the psul of Hadar carries over the whole week, and the psul of Chaser somehow falls short after the first day. So the Ran cannot do that, because the Ran holds that these are both psulim of Hadar. So the Ran is mamshin a pickle. So the Ran has to differentiate between two different levels of Hadar. That's already even much more difficult. Tosfos is not so bad. It's not so hard. Tosfos says that some psulim of Hadar, the Hadar psulim carry over, and the Chaser psulim don't carry over. Whereas according to the Ran, it's one big parish of Hadar. So the Ran's in a lot of trouble. So he's got to work hard to try to explain to you why there are differences even within the psulim Hadar itself. So I'll go upon him. Everybody agrees that an Esrog HaChoser is a problem. You just have to figure out lumdus why exactly it's going to be possible. Because an Esrog HaChoser is a problem, this is, according to some, the source for halacha that everybody agrees to, but yet nobody's exactly sure where it came from. And that's the din of an Esrog HaMurkav. If you have an esrog that was grafted, let's say you grafted an esrog tree in a lemon tree, and now you got a resulting fruit, so we assume that esrog is absolutely possible min haTorah. No questions about it. The question is, but where they come from exactly? It's not a Mishnah, not a Gemara, not a Rishon, a Shulchan. That doesn't say anything about an esrog hamurkav. Where exactly did this come from? So there's the most significant shuv about this was written by Moshe Alshich. Moshe Alshich lived the Alshich on Kodesh and Chumash. So he lived in Tzfat in the time of the Beis Yosef. So he wrote a long shuv about the esrogim hamurkavim. So he writes, it's a davar poshut. Everybody knows that the esrogim hamurkavim are possible. We're just not exactly sure why the puzzle. So one of the reasons that's given why a grafted esrog is puzzle is because maybe it's like a choser. It's not really totally there. That means part of the esrog isn't there. Part of the esrog is a lemon. So one could argue in that reason it's not exactly choser. It doesn't exactly take away from the hider of the esrog. Forget it. Maybe it looks even nicer if it's grafted with a lemon. So that's already not so posh that that's a reason to actually puzzle it. Then there are other reasons that are given to puzzle it. Some want to argue that the reason why a grafted esrog is puzzle is a kmitzah babi avera. Because since there's an issur to graft, you're not allowed to graft a lemon tree and an esrog tree. According to some, even goyim are not allowed to do that. Mechloikis tanoim, Mesechta Sanhedrin, where the grafting trees is like part of the, not literally one of the shevus, but according to some, it's actually also based on a puzzle. It's also even for goyim to do that. So that's the case, since the esrog was brought about through an avera, so maybe that's considered to be like a category of a mitzvah babi avera. That's also a question. Is that really a correct application of mitzvah babi avera? It's not the usual way. Mitzvah babi avera doesn't usually refer to the creation of the esrog itself, so that's also a little bit unclear. So there are different reasons that are given. All the poskim, people try to figure out why the esrog hamurkav is possible. The assumption is that it's possible, we're just not quite sure why. So I think it said over in the name of Reb Chaim, if I'm not mistaken, that Reb Chaim said the reason why nobody bothered to tell you that the esrog hamurkav is possible, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't say the esrog hamurkav is possible. So the Reb Chaim said, apparently, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't say that a banana is possible also. He doesn't say that an apple is also possible, because he told you you have to take an esrog. So an esrog means an esrog. Once it's murkav, so it's not an esrog anymore. It's a different. It's a half esrog, half lemon. It's a different species. It's like when you have a peach and a plum. You know, when you mix them together, A nectarine? Is that a nectarine? So he said, a nectarine is not a peach. It's not a peach. It's not a plum. It's a third thing. It's a very different atzmo. So he said, an esrog amorkov. It's not an esrog. It's not a lemon. It's a thing. It's a new thing called a grafted esrog. So Chaim said, what do you need the Shulchan Aruch to tell you that it's possible? You need a Mishnah to tell you that it's possible. You can figure it out on your own. It's not an esrog. It's not an esrog. So whatever the reason is, Lamai, so we assume for sure that the esrog amorkovim are absolutely possible in our Torah, because the chosim, it's about there, a half dozen reasons, but Lamai said they're for sure considered to be possible. That's what the poskim point out. They want us to be very, very careful that the esrogim are not murkavim. So the poskim gave all kinds of different aitzes about how to figure it out. The guy goes to the store, buys an esrog, how does he know whether it's a murkav or not? So they give you a kind of kunsim how to figure out. They call a bunch of simonim how to figure out. The poskim write that all the simanim are not 100%. Some of the simanim are how the seeds are laying. How are you going to figure that out? Unless you X-ray your esrog. So somebody gave me a couple of years ago. One of the radiologists gave me a picture of an esrog that was X-rayed, and he gave me I think he did a CAT scan and MRI and X-ray. So he did all the different tests on his esrog to show you all the different possibilities of what different parts of the esrog look like. I don't know how to read an X-ray on a broken bone. I don't know how to read an X-ray on an esrog. I have no idea what it is. So he's trying to show me how the seeds were looking based on all this stuff. Give me a new chumrah. You have to bring a radiologist to learn about an esrog. Anyway, so the post came right that whatever these simanim are about how the seeds look and how the bumps look and how this looks, the animal looks, the whole thing is not convincing anyway. So therefore, the only way to really know that an esrog is not murkav is you have to trust the people who planted it. So that's why Bizman Hazeh, nobody relies on the simanim anymore. We all rely on the fact that on the boxes, that when you buy an esrog, it gives you ashkach, it tells you, the Madatz is telling you that it's not murkav, and this is from the Chazanish, this is from Yerim, whatever it was, they're telling you they have a tradition that this particular orchard was not grafted.
So, does it take money, esrog, and a regular esrog?
I don't know. But yeah, I use a regular Eretz Yisrael esrog. It says in the box. Whatever it says in the box. The Nats is telling it's not Murkav, or Rav Hosna is telling it's not Murkav. Whatever Hashkach we rely on for food, so we can rely on for this regular also. I don't know about the good one of the most famous dinim, every little kid knows about the din of the esrog, is that the pitum can't fall off. It's a sugi about that. It's not so posh, but the pitum can't fall off. Why can't the pitum fall off? What's so terrible if the pitum falls off? So there's a machlekes of Rishonim, what exactly the psul is. Some of the Rishonim say that's considered to be like choser. It's considered to be like part of the esrog is missing. The same way, if you take a bite out of the esrog on the first day, that would not be good. So if you have a pitum falls off, that's choser in the esrog. The other Rishonim would say that's not choser. That's not part of the esrog proper. The esrog itself is still intact. In fact, that a little bit in the top, the stem, the branch, whatever it is, fell off, that doesn't take away from the shlemusa, from the completeness, from the wholeness of the esrog. So why is that possible? Because it doesn't look nice. It's a lack of hadar. It doesn't look pretty. So that's the reason why it's possible. The nafkamina kamina, whether it's possible, mishum hadar, mishum chaser. So the famous nafkamina is, after the first days, after the first 2 days of chutz la'aretz. So if you hold it, it's based on chaser. So we said before, the Rebbe Chanina took a bite out of his esrog, after the first day, so you see that chaser doesn't apply for whatever reason after the first day. So then a broken pitum wouldn't apply after the first day also. But if you hold it's based on hadar, so that would potentially be a problem, because many of the psulit hadar, according to many Rishonim, do carry over after the first day. So there are different opinions about that. So our minhag is that if the pitum falls off, then the ikra din we hold, you can really make a bracha after the first 2 days, because there are some Rishonim who say the whole problem is only chaser, and there are some Rishonim who say that even if it's hadar, so maybe you can even make a bracha on hadar also. Even if it's lacking hadar after the first 2 days, you can still make a bracha. So the minhag is to be pretty lenient about this. The poskim write, if you can get another esrog, but if you can't get another esrog, so if the pitum falls off, as long as it's after the first 2 days and chutz starts, then it would be all right.
You can buy an esrog.
Right. If it didn't have a pitum, if it never had a pitum in the first place, so then it's okay. Right. That's what the post can point out, that if it grew that way without a pitum, then it's okay. When I went to Eretz Yisrael last Shemitah 7 years ago, so the esrog dealer told me, the esrog grower told me, that all the esrog can grow with pitums at the beginning. If they don't grow with the pitum, the pitum is the part where the fruit gets fertilized. So he said, if it doesn't have a pitum when it first starts, it's never going to become an esrog. So what the poskim meant when they say that it grows without a pitum, that means that the pitum breaks off very, very early in the development of the fruit, so the fruit grows over itself. So it grows over that area, so it doesn't look so bad. That's what it means. It doesn't mean it never had a pitum. Everything had a pitum. But when we speak about a pitum breaking off, that's possible. That means it grew, and the pitum stayed. Well, it grew. Then your kid drops it a week later. So that's considered to be a broken pitum. But if on the tree itself, it covered over nicely, so that's okay.
Yeah, so how would we know?
How would you know? Right, so how would you know? So the tree, you can usually tell. Usually you can tell by looking at it, whether if the pitum actually broke, or whether it formed over nicely. Usually you can tell. And if you can't tell, you ask the guy who's telling you this, right? I hope he's telling you the tree.
Hydroponics.
They're growing astrogum hydroponically?
No, would it be kosher or does it have to move out to the ground?
I guess it's alkalium. That's what it says. That's a general question about anything that grows with hydroponics, whether it's considered to be a pre-Adama, pre-Aitz. We gave a whole shit about this one, Yeshav Zagadol, many moons ago. Whether you could use it for Moror. Is there a din that the Esrog has to be, in order to be called a pre? It has to be a pre height. I don't know. Think about that. I'm not sure they can grow a Esrog being hydroponically. I'm not sure. But
they didn't. You're talking about when the bite is taken out. That should be a question in Hunter also. It's not beautiful anymore.
So,
like you take an apple, it's a beautiful apple, you take a bite.
Right.
Out of
so that's what the Rambam. So the Rambam and the Rabban, right? You see from that Gemara that even Psuli Hunter after the first there, okay. And the Taisus would respond that Hadar means that there's nothing bad on it. The fact that it doesn't look so nice because it's lacking something. That's a different psul. That's called chos. That's called the lack of Hadar. Different type of psul. Okay, so we've got to move on to the next minute. We're running out of time. So we move on to Priya Tzal, the Kapos Tamarim. So you have to look for a lulav. What do you have to look for in a lulav? So, the thing that most people spend most of the time looking at a lulav is what's called nechlat yomes. The Gemara has in the third parak of Sukkah about the describing that the leaves of the lulav are supposed to be stuck together. Each leaf is really a dual leaf. So the Gemara has a shaila. What if the leaf starts to split? So the leaves start to split. So then maybe that's not good. Maybe that detracts from the lulav. It's also shaila. Is that considered to be a lack of hodr? Is that considered to be a problem? Choser or whatever it is. If the leaves of the lulav start to split, that's going to be a problem. How many leaves have to split in order to be a problem? So probably most of the Rishonim say, it means if all the leaves of the lulav split apart, so the whole lulav is falling apart. So, or rove, let's say Rubu Kekula, most of the leaves of the lulav split apart, that would be a problem. So there's some Rishonim that have a chumrah that say, no, that when the Gemara speaks about Nechba Tiyomis, it's not speaking about all the leaves, it's talking about a very, very specific leaf. But there's one specific leaf in the lulav that's considered to be the Tiyomis, the one that's the dual leaf that we really care about, and that's the top leaf of the lulav. So when you look at the lulav, and you see literally the shedra, the spine of the lulav, and you just follow it up to the top, so the leaf that usually goes up to the top, that's supposed to be combined together, and that leaf starts to rip apart, so that would be a problem. So if you would go with the first approach, that Nechlat Yomis refers to all the leaves, or a robe of the leaves, is always one specific leaf. So this day would practically not be shattered. Most of the leaves falling apart. So the whole thing wouldn't be true. The whole Nechlat Yomis wouldn't really apply today. But since we try to be Machmed, that our lulav should be kosher, so we try that even to be Machmed, that even the Tiyomis itself, that one leaf, we try to take the utmost care about. How much does that top leaf have to split in order for it to be a problem? So here also you have a question. So many of the Rishonim say that leaf has to split all the way down, or at least over the way down. It's got to split significantly amount down to the shedra in order for it to be a problem. A little break on top, it's split open a little bit on top. Big deal. It's a big deal. A little bit of a split in the leaf. So some of Machmah even in that. Some of Machmah that not only is it's a double chumrah, that not only do we take care about that first top leaf, but we try to make sure that first top leaf isn't split at all. So the Mishnah Berurah writes that if it's only split a very, very small amount, then you don't have to do Machmah that. Mishnah Berurah quotes in Taz, it's a Shev Tefach. If it splits such an insignificant amount, then forget about it. But if it starts to split more than that, so then one should try to be Machmah that. So we try the Chadchilu when we look for a Lulav, so we try to make sure that the top leaf is intact, and it should really preferably be all the way intact. And if it's starting to split a little bit, so if you can't get another lulav, so then that would for sure be kosher as well. There are some lulavim that come in such a way that it almost ensures you that it's not going to split. If it starts to curve over a little bit on the top, so that will make sure that it's not going to split. So that's what they quote from the Rush, that the Torah quote from as far from the Rush, it used to be Mach Bedafka to get a lulav like that. That it was bent over a little bit on top. So since it was bent over a little bit, that would keep the lulav in place. He wouldn't have to worry about Nechlat Yomis. So there are some who try to get that. The Chassidim like to get those kinds of lulavim. That's the Shittas HaRush. So there's a ritva in Masechet Sukkah that says that he doesn't think you should get a lulav like that. Why? He says he thinks that even though that lulav is better in terms of Nechlat Yomes, but it's a problem in terms of something else. The Mishnah says, if you have a lulav that bends over, if you have a lulav that's totally bent over, so then that lulav is puzzled. So we usually think totally bent over means that the whole lulav is mamish broken, means the lulav is literally hunched over. That would be a problem. But just a little mashu on top is bent a little bit, it's not considered to be a problem. So the Ritva says no. The Ritva says if the lulav is bent at all, that's a problem. So according to that Ritva, it would be better dafka not to get over the bent over top. So yesh v'yesh, either one is okay. So we pass in Mikra Din like the Rosh that it's perfectly okay if the lulav is bent over a little bit, and there are some who are mahad dafka to get that, and there are others who say no. Others who say we don't want to get involved in any shailas, so we'll look for, we'll spend the extra 20 minutes finding a lulav that's straight to the top, and hopefully it will be intact the way it is. A good way also to, if you look for a lulav have the brown stuff in the middle, so the brown stuff is usually good. It doesn't look so pretty, but it's good in the sense that it keeps it together, that it's going to make sure that the leaves don't split apart. Again, the Nechlat Yomes is really a chumras, a gabi chumras, but we, at least for the first day or two, we try to make sure that top leaf is intact, and even if it splits a little bit, it's not the end of the world. If it doesn't split row, then for sure it's still mikra then okay. I think he quotes a taz that says, but it's less than a tefach. That's nothing. Yeah. The whole shir, there's no halach masina shir tefach here. It's just the poskim are afraid if it starts to split a little bit, if you start shaking, it's going to keep on splitting. So they say if it sells you a little bit, by the time you get to the third day, it already won't matter anymore. The Magen Avraham writes that after the first 2 days, mikra din is kosher anyway, because it was only problem of chaser. Mikra din the Magen Avraham paskins like a reni ruchim that the whole problem of nechat yomis is only chaser, so therefore it would be okay after the first day or the first 2 days in chutz la'aretz.
2 days
of
first day.
So I keep on saying it because the Gemara says the first day, but the Ran has a suffix about the second day in Chutz La'aretz. So we try to be machmir that the second day has all the chumras in Chutz La'aretz, so the first day in Eretz Yisrael. So those who keep 1 day in Eretz Yisrael, so that would be already like Chol HaMoed. I didn't mean those who come from Chutz La'aretz, Eretz Yisrael. I meant those people who have been Eretz Yisrael, whatever that means. You can plug in the. So the chumra of the, yes, it depends. If you go to the Kosel, if you go to the old city, so then there's a binyan tzion that says that there's a shav deraisa, because maybe that's called the fneshim lekechem. The Rambam seems to say that all of Yerushalayim, halach Yerushalayim, is called the fneshim lekechem. So the the binyan tzion is a chumra that the lulav and esek should be kosher with deraisa. If you go into the Kosel, you have to be careful about that. It's also a chumra. But that was it.
All joking, so if you should not daven?
No, you should. You should go to the Kotel to daven. You should make sure you're moving out of this kosher. So go get a good one. You should get a good one.
If you're
ready, going all the way. You're flying all the way to Eretz Yisrael to go fly to the Kotel. You get yourself a good daven. They're very cheap in Eretz Yisrael.
No, I'm saying if you're attentive and you have suffix in the kashrus of Yemen.
I mean, it's the second day.
Right.
It's the second day. So now you're chosen for their eyes. Wow, really too complicated. I don't know.
Right.
Try to find someone else. You'll find someone who'll give you a matanos tachzeh. Okay. Good. The Mishnah says in the beginning of the third paragraph of Sukkah, we quoted before that the lulav can't be yavish, it can't be dry. How dry is considered to be dry? So Tosis quotes very, very big kula. Tosis quotes that in order to be a lulav yavish, it has to be so dry that if you touch it, it would basically start to crumble up in your hands. So the Ramah writes that in Eastern Europe they used to rely on that Tosis because they couldn't get lulavim, so they would use the lulav from 1 year to the next. Well, even though they were very, very dry, but they weren't so dry that mamash falling apart, that was also good. So many of the Rishayim disagree with Tosis. Many of the Rishayim say that as long as once the lulav is no longer green, it looks white. Yavesh, okay, it's mamash, looks like a mace. So then Rishayim says, well, mace in halukah, how can you take a lulav that's mamash so dried up? So once it loses the greenness, so that's considered to be a problem. That's how we try to follow the halacha. So the post can point out that the Ramah was only makel because they had no choice. So they had to rely on that sheet of Tosis. But most of the Rishonim probably held that once it dips beneath the point where it's no longer green, that would be a problem. So why don't you try to be careful to get a fresh-looking, decent-looking lulav. After we move on from the lulav, so we move to the hadassim. So the hadassim have to be what the Gemara describes in Anaf, the Pasuk says Anaf, it's over, so it has to be like an interlocking chain type of look to it. So that's what's called a mishulosh. It has to have three leaves, and the three leaves have to be coming together at the same level. That's considered to be hadas. That's the hadas of Batera. The Gemara talks about what's called the hadashoita, about the term hadashoita seems to mean a silly hadas. It's a foolish hadas. It's trying to make fun of us, this hadas. So it only has two leaves on the same level. It's called the hadashoita. There are some who say that the correct gears in the Gemara is not hadashita, it's a hadashita. Because we say in this mirror, it's hadashita baroshita. A shita is another name for a hadas tree. So hadashita means, this is just a branch. This is just a branch for Yama. This is not a hadas tree. But I think the Rashbam in Masechet Mevasser quotes that the Gemara, and he had the gears of hadashita. Whatever it is, shita, shita, whatever it is, it's possible. Bottom line is, hadashita is possible. If it only has two, if it only has two, and then the third leaf is not on the, so not together in the same level, so that's considered to be hadashoit, and that's considered to be puzzle. So this was a big, big problem in Europe, because it was very hard in Eastern Europe to get any of the minim, except for maybe the Arabs were easy to get, but the hadassim were very difficult to get. So they very often they would get these hadassim that were probably what the Gemara would call hadashoites. So how do you use such hadassim? The Gemara said, the favor said it's puzzle. So the Ramah quotes, tries to be matzik the minig, tries to defend the minig in Eastern Europe. They've used these hadashoites. So the Ramah says, if you look in the Gemara, there's actually machloikis about it. There's machloikis in the Gemara, whether this is a good hadas or not. So the Ramah writes that even though we paskin, that's not a puzzle, most of the Rishonim seem to quote that the maskaras of Gemara seems to be that it's puzzle. It's not the favorish in the Gemara that we paskin that way. So maybe one could argue that anything that's mamish befeirish in the Gemara, that's already clearly what the Pesach Halacha is, even Mishasar Chak is going to be apostle. The Gemara says in the beginning of Masechus Nida that when you have a Shah that comes up, and there's already an Amdul Binyan, there's already a Psach Gomor, and it's already given, this is the way it was voted, the Halacha such and such, you can't turn around and say, well, it's a Shasar Chak, so let me rely on the other Shita. But if it was never Nimnu V'Gomor, it was never actually decided, like such and such Shita, it's just that we're basically being naive like that sheet. It seems to be that that's the way we're following, but there was never an official psak. So then the Gemara says, B'shas al-chak, you can rely on the other sheet also. Kedai u'b'loz l'smokho b'shas al-chak, koz man shlo amdu l'minyans. That's what the Ramah seems to be defending the practice in Eastern Europe, that although the Gemara sounds like it's concluding that hadashayt is possible, that's what the Rishonim quotes, but apparently in Eastern Europe they felt that it wasn't really nimnu v'gomru that way, it wasn't an absolute clear-cut psak, and therefore b'shas al-chak gomru, we can rely on the other day in the Gemara. Since there was one sheet in the Gemara that said it was kosher, it's not the shasar chak, you can't get a hadassim, so we can rely on that shita. So it's a very, very difficult Ramah. The pashat that Dvarim is that shita was rejected in the Gemara itself. And the simple flow of the Gemara is that shita doesn't exist anymore. So then you can't start bringing back shitas to life, even b'shasar chak. So then the Ramah tries to give other reasons to defend the practice, maybe the way these hadassim are, this is not quite the same as that shita in the Gemara, maybe that shita in the Gemara was two on one level, one on top, and this is just two and then two. So I can't give you a whole explanation why the Metzius is that it's that our hadashotas are maybe still okay. So the Poskim write that in Eastern Europe, what are you going to do? They had no choice, so they relied on these very, very strange, very, very difficult tziruchim lahakol. But nobody should really rely on that. That's why nobody relies on that pesmat. Yeah, we paskin that the hadassim have to be kosher completely. They have to be mamish mashulosh. How mashulosh does it have to be in order to be kosher? So the chadchila should be mashulosh the whole shiur of the hadass. How much is the hadass? It's supposed to be three tvachim. So the whole, you should go from the top of the hadass, go all the way down. It should be three tvachim mashulosh. And that's what the hadass is really supposed to look like. If you can't get hadass mashulosh, that's mashulosh bakulo, then you can rely on rov. As long as rov of the shiur of the hadass is mashulosh, so that would also technically be okay.
That's about a foot now?
Three tvachim, less than a foot. Three tvachim is, according to Chazanish, it's about a foot, but according to others, it's a little bit less than that. Right, so you shouldn't put the whole thing into the hole. You should put enough that the hadas protrudes up more than three tochim. That way, whatever goes into the hole, forget. It doesn't matter what happens there. So that's what the Zman is. Nobody sits around looking for hadas and mishulosh. When I was a kid, we used to sit around in the hours and try to find the hadas and mishulosh. Nobody does that. Everybody buys the pre-packed hadas and Zman is. So you hope that those are good. They're not always good. So you may want to buy yourself a couple extra ones just to be sure. So depending on how much money you're interested in spending for a dollar medium, whether you want to buy aleph, 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 plus, 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 different shiurim. So they give you chazanish, they give you kol chazanish, rov chazanish, every different amount. And then with all that said and done, you should take a look yourself and see to make sure that it actually is mashulosh. But again, they're usually good. 90% of the time, usually the ones in the package are what they say. So you mikra din, as long as we're over the shiur, mishulosh, so mikra din is going to be kosher. Anyway, one should be careful that the top of the hadas, the branch, is not broken off. If the top of the branch is broken off, that can also be a potential problem. So you should take a quick look. Usually it's not broken. It's usually covered over with a leaf. You can usually see that everything looks intact. So if somebody chopped off the top of the branch, that would be a problem. The Gemara, the Mishnah talks about another psul that we don't even have as much anymore. That's the anovim. If you have the berries on the hadasim, so when you buy the prepackaged hadasim, they took all the berries off for you. So in the olden days, you have berries on the hadasim, so you had to see what color the berries are, how many berries are. But again, most of us don't even see those hadasim anymore. The last of the dalaminim are the arabas. The post can point out that a person can spend a lot of money for dalaminim, and then he buys posel arabas for 29 cents, and he didn't fulfill anything. He lost the whole mitzvah. You need a kicha damos. You have to make sure that the arabas are a kasha. What are some of the things you have to make sure that the arabas have to them? So you have to make sure they're arabas. So most of the arabas that are sold today, we hope all of them are arabas. There are sometimes different kinds of leaves that can sometimes resemble arabas, but there are arabas that are usually sold in the regular, let's say arabas kind of places, regular arabas bags are regular arabas, and they would be kosher. You have to just make sure that the arabas are not all that dry. So at the beginning of sukkahs, that's not a problem. As sukkahs goes on, so they tend to dry up a lot. What's considered to be the shear of drying? So if they are so dry, the post can say that the mamash have turned completely black, you can't see any green at all in them, so that's going to be a problem. So if you don't take care of your aravas properly, you just leave them sitting out exposed, so then by the middle of Chalamoid, you can for sure need a new set of aravas. So even if you do keep them properly covered, you should try. You should try if you're able to. Baruch Hashem, we live in a time we can get new aravas all the time. So usually by the middle of Chalamoid, it's usually a good idea to try to get a little bit of another batch of aravas. They should look a little bit more of a hood. If the aravas and mamash totally dried out, that would be a problem. Or if the aravas starting to lose a lot of leaves, losing more leaves than they had leaves, nashe revolov, that would be a problem as well. Again, so once you just try to give a little bit of the rashi prokem on each of the minim, once you try to do their best, try to find to look that the minim should look pretty. It's supposed to be an expression of the mitzvah, the keli v'andeyu. What makes it halukah? It's supposed to be a beautiful way to mishabeh ganesh baruch hu. So the minim should be indicative of that idea as well.
Is this one of the things that you should be mishdatef yourself, or just getting them is?
There's no mitzvah to go buy your own dalaminim.
So someone gets it, you don't get it. Involved,
yeah. Well, kachtam doesn't mean to buy. Kachtam means to buy.
No, there's no hit, there's no Indian mitzvah to actually find.
Well, I don't think so.